It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Or you can tope.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right, welcome everybody. It's 4:02 in the Pacific Time Zone. Time for Toker Talk Radio. And for today's second hour, you're going to get a heaping helping of the first ever Portland Normal membership meeting. Clipped up some of the highlights from the meeting, including Sean Alexander from DFW Normal and a question and answer session with Measure 91 Chief Petitioner Anthony Johnson. But we're going to start things off with me and my introduction of the Portland Normal Board to our membership. Enjoy. This was shot Saturday at the Tony Starlight Lounge.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. It's high noon, and my name is Russ Belville. I'm the executive director of the new Portland Normal. And I want to welcome you here to our inaugural meeting. Thank you for being here. Give yourself a hand, because on a gorgeous Saturday afternoon in Portland, when the sun comes out, you really got to be dedicated to be in a place like this. I want to welcome a few folks in the audience who are very special to me. Madeline Martinez is here. She is the reason I'm here. She's on the Normal Board of Directors and was the executive director for Oregon Normal when this May, 10 years ago, I showed up in Oregon from Boise, Idaho, because I had to get out of Boise, Idaho. And I wanted to get involved in marijuana activism. And I showed up to a march, and Madeline said, I said, oh, this is Madeline Martinez. You know, she runs Oregon Normal. And I said, yeah, I'd like to get involved. And the first thing she said to me was, what can you do? What can you do? And I said, well, I do web design. Oh, you want to do our website? Okay. What else do you do? Well, I was a professional musician. Oh, you've been on stage. You want to do our TV show? That I have set, because she taught it to me. She also taught me, when you say start at high noon, start at high noon. You can't let these people think, oh, I'll get there whenever. We are serious about this. This is not about marijuana. Seems weird, right? National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. This is not about marijuana. This is about freedom. Marijuana just happens to be the noun we're using around this, but it is about freedom. And that's the perspective we bring to this, is that we want this to be a fight for civil liberties. And I like to think of it as from legalization to equalization. We got legalization to some limited, tiny degree. Now it's time to equalize ourselves with the beer drinkers out there and the cigar smokers out there and have the same rights and privileges and responsibilities. Let me give you a brief rundown of how we're going to run the meeting today, because we've got some very special guests showing up. Hit the next slide there, if you would, Scott. I'll give you the introduction to the board. Then we're going to turn things over to Scott Gordon, our deputy director, who's going to welcome you here and raffle off a few quick things. Did everyone get a raffle ticket? Little blue raffle ticket? If not, talk to the folks at the back desk there. And we'll raffle some free stuff off, because we have some supporters and some sponsors who helped us put this all together, and we like to promote them and help them and help you by getting some free stuff. Nothing wrong with that. Then I've got a presentation to give you a look at what Portland Normal is all about and what our core principles are and why we formed them. And the basic thesis is we learned lessons from legalization. We've learned from Colorado and Washington, and Oregon's going to do it right because we've learned those lessons. Then we'll do another door prize. Then we'll get up our special guest. He's back there, Sean McAllister from DFW Normal. Hi, Sean. He's out here from Arlington, Texas, is in between Dallas and Fort Worth, to give us some perspective from the red states as to what we're doing here and why it's so important. And then finally, after another set of door prize things that we'll raffle off, we've got Anthony Johnson, who is the chief petitioner of Measure 91. He's going to be here to tell us what's going on at the legislature, what's going on with the Liquor Control Commission, and what the New Approach Oregon campaign is going to be doing to fight to see that Measure 91's implemented the way we voted on it. That's what we're in here for. All right, hit the next slide there. So, quick introduction. Again, I'm Russ Belville, executive director. I've been doing activism now for 10 years. I write for High Times, Alternate, Huffington Post, Reset, The Fix, a few other places. My latest article is in the latest issue of the High Times magazine, the 420 issue. It's on racism, the stepchild of prohibition, something like that. I can't remember the exact title. And like I said, I started with Oregon Normal. I worked for National Normal from 2008 to 2012. And since 2012, I've been running a 24-hour marijuana legalization talk radio network called 420radio.org. Our deputy director is right here, Scott Gordon. He is a 25-year activism veteran from Alabama by way of LA and has been working with his company, Herb Age Design. He was also very prominent in Oregon Normal and still prominent in putting things on like the Portland Hemp Stock and the Global Marijuana March. We have Calico Castile back here. He's caught him mid-stride. Calico is our communications director. He'll be in charge of our social media and responding to the requests we get from the media and from our membership. Jennifer Alexander is right there. Jennifer is our facilities director. She'll be helping us to coordinate these events and the locations that we hold them at. Rachel Kurtz is not here because she is studying for the Oregon Bar. So, yeah, because we need more lawyers in our group. That's always good to have lawyers when you're people like us. So Rachel, though, she brings a ton of experience. She comes from Seattle. She's just moved here, and she's part of the Seattle Hemp Fest. She's part of the Center for the Study of Cannabis Policy, a very, very smart woman, so we're glad to have her on. We've got Randy Quast. Randy is right back in the back. Randy is the former executive director of Minnesota Normal, who has recently moved here to Portland and want to get involved with marijuana and the reform. He's a very successful entrepreneur and businessman and has made almost all of this possible. Please give him another big hand for bringing that activism from Minnesota. And we also have John Lucy the Fourth right back here. He is our legal counsel. John Lucy's job is to be that little voice in my head that says, you're not going to do that, are you? That's not a really good bet. You think you really want it? Yeah, so it's always good to have a John Lucy's why this sign says, hey, we're filming you. Make sure that we know that kind of stuff's going on. So that is our board. Everybody's email address is basically their first name at portlandnormal.org. They're quite set up yet, but they will be. But within a week or so, when our website goes live, you'll be able to email directly to them. In the meantime, if you want to contact us, you can get portlandnormal@gmail.com. All right, let's turn things over now to another slide there, and we'll get to that in a second. Right now, we'll turn things over to Scott Gordon, also known as Herb Thrasher, for some welcome and some raffle.
Big thanks to Scott and everybody who was involved with the Portland Normal meeting. We got more of that coming up right after the break. Stay tuned.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Coming up next, my speech at the inaugural Portland Normal meeting outlining the mission statement and 10 organizational principles of Portland Normal. What does marijuana reform look like in a marijuana legalization state? Now that it's legal, what do activists do to reform marijuana laws? My thesis is we need to move from legalization to equalization. That's coming up right after the break.
Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the national organization for the reform of marijuana laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today. And now, the Portland Normal organization principles from our Saturday meeting.
All right. Thank you very much. Glad to have you here. And we'll run through this to just give you an overview of what Portland Normal is about and what we're going to be fighting for with the Liquor Control Commission and with the legislature as far as how Measure 91 should be implemented. First of all, this is our mission statement. Portland Normal is dedicated to ensuring that responsible legal adult marijuana consumers are provided the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as adult alcohol consumers. That's the freedom angle to me. I don't understand why somebody can have as much beer as they want at their home and brew as much, up to 100 gallons of beer, but marijuana, we got to treat it like plutonium. So we understand that legalization begins in small steps, and we're going to be okay with 1 ounce and, you know, four plants at home and 8 ounces at home. That's going to be okay for a first step, but by no means is that equalization. By no means is that the same rights and treating like alcohol that we were promised. So we are working for equalization. And what's important about having Portland Normals, because all the other players have a loud voice in this movement. The growers, they've got two or three packs going on. The retailers, dispensary owners, they got plenty of money and lobbyists to throw at this. The regulators, they got a certain idea how it should be. Law enforcement, the cops, they want it certain bright lines and restrictions. Who's going to talk for us, the cannabis consumers? The people who might want to grow a plant at home or maybe four, but, you know, we're not in it for business. We're not in it for money. We just want our rights. We just want our freedom. That's what we're about with Portland Normal. And why a Portland Normal, a very focused city chapter, is because I believe Portland has a special voice in this compared to the rest of the state. We don't have the same concerns as rural Eastern Oregon or the fears they might have. We don't have the same concerns as Southern Oregon might have. Or a college town like Eugene, for that matter. We're a very large urban metroplex area that's going to get the focus of national attention. You know, when the news cameras come to talk about what's happening in Oregon, they're not going to be flying to Burns. You can't fly to Burns, can you? Can you? Okay. They're going to come to Portland. And so we feel it was necessary to form a Portland Normal to speak for Portlanders, because a large population means unique issues. We've got city issues we have to deal with that other places don't have to deal with. And we've got the largest measure of support for legalization of any place in the state. Flip to that next slide. This is a precinct by precinct look at the voting totals for Measure 91. This area here was 89.9%. That's the southeastern side, you know, MLK, Grant, that kind of area, right? 90% in the central core, and kind of like a bullseye radiating out from that 90%. Most of urban Portland is high 80s. Across the river, it's in the high 70s. You get past the 42nd area there, and you're in the 70s. You cross over 205, you're into the 60s and 50s. So that's how the support breaks down in Portland, and why we thought it was important to have a voice for these people who overwhelmingly support legalization. Hit it. So here are our core principles. There are 10 of them. You can think of these as the Ten Commandments of Portland Normal. And number one is maintaining the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program Registry Card System and its privileges. You agree with that? Yeah. Why? Because we learned a lesson. We learned that Colorado showed that, hey, if you got a well-regulated medical program, you can have a recreational program too, and they can run alongside each other. There's no problem. The problems are in Washington, where medical marijuana isn't very well regulated. But in Colorado, they seem to be doing pretty well with that regulation. And besides, Measure 91 said three times they're not going to change OMMP. If you promise me something three times, you ought to stick to it. Next one. We believe in medical marijuana dispensaries' right to choose retail licensing. Not forced to. You don't have to. You want to be a dispensary and stay a dispensary, that's cool. But as consumers, and this was brought up at the OLCC listening session, I live on Sandy Boulevard. If I drive toward the river, there's about five dispensaries that way. If I drive away from the river, there's about three dispensaries that way. Where's the pot shop supposed to locate? If they're all supposed to be 1,000 feet away from each other. So all these dispensaries already have a jump on the best locations. I don't think we as consumers, as adult consumers, should have to be forced out into a red light industrial district somewhere. But again, we shouldn't force the medical people to have to change. So let's give them the opportunity to change. Some of them will. Some of them will want to offer those things, and we can go with that. Or they can be both. That's right. That's what I'm saying. Not forced to. Choose to if they wish to. All right, let's get the next one. Measure 91 affirmed that the people have the sole right to ban marijuana commerce, not a city council, not a county commission. They want that. League of Oregon Cities, Associated Oregon Counties, they're both fighting for that power to have like a 5-0 vote of a bunch of people that don't know anything about weed to ban it. We have learned from Washington and Colorado that if you let them do that, you get this. It's legal, some places it's not. And that involves a lot of cross traffic, people from a non-legal place driving over to shop at a legal place, and this place not having the same level as that level, and so forth. We don't want those headaches. Those headaches help embolden the black market. They help enrich the black market. They help to prevent what we're trying to do with legalization, and that is to bring this all above ground. Now, if a city or county does want to ban marijuana commerce, we give them that right because we copied it from the alcohol rules. Multnomah County could hold a vote if they wanted to and ban alcohol. They're not going to, but they could. So we copied that. Measure 91 got that right from the alcohol rules. And so, you know, if someone in Eastern Oregon wants to put a petition together and get it on the ballot and a majority of the people say they don't want pot shops, fine. But let's not leave it up to three commissioners or five councilmen to do that. And going along that same line is the affirmation of the state's sole right of taxation. Again, copied from the alcohol laws. There's not a Multnomah County beer tax and a Salem, Oregon liquor tax. There's just state of Oregon alcohol taxes, which are ridiculously low, by the way. They haven't been raised in years, but that's a whole other talk. Colorado and Washington show this, that if you have local taxation, and these cities or these localities add extra percentage points, it just boosts the price of the weed, and that leads to more people shopping in the black market. In Washington state, they actually have the problem of people dealers hanging out in the parking lots to undercut the dispensary price that's taxed 25% three times. We want to keep that tax low. Measure 91 matches our alcohol taxation laws, and it supersedes and repeals all inconsistent charters and ordinances. So these guys that pass their tax, like Portland, they say they want a 10% tax. Well, that is repealed. We just repealed that as the people. They're fighting to get that stuff grandfathered in. And I don't think I should have to drive to somewhere cheaper. And all this does is incentivize people to either cheat or go back to the black market. Establishment of adult personal use venues, vapor lounges, coffee shops. The lesson that we've learned from Washington and Colorado. Washington has shown us that if you don't give people a place to toke, they find a place to toke. The park, the bus stop, wherever it might be. The public citations have gone way up in Seattle. And just like arrests used to be, they're disproportionately against African-American and poor people. So what good is that? Let's give people a place to toke and let them take advantage of that. And Colorado has shown us that if you don't give people a place to toke, they decide they're going to use a cookie instead. Or a brownie, and they don't have a lot of experience with that. Maybe the last time they smoked a joint was Woodstock era, and now you're giving them a 100-milligram cookie? forget about it. You're going to get Maureen Dowd. We don't want those kind of stories coming out of Oregon. So let's set ourselves up. Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes is already lobbying the city council to get some sort of vapor lounge ordinance going. And again, if we're going to treat this like alcohol, give us our pub. We deserve a pub. Rejection of junk science DUID standards. Now, thank you, Anthony, for not putting any sort of per se limit in Measure 91. As we've seen from Washington and Oregon, Washington and Colorado, all this does is it penalizes marijuana consumers who are more likely to not be impaired. It's really funny. Like, a newbie who smokes a puff is probably too stoned to drive, and he might only be at 4 nanograms. But a guy like me who smokes every day, I've developed a tolerance. I might drive just fine at 15. I might wake up at 10. So there is no magic number limit like there is for alcohol. Marijuana ain't alcohol. So we are going to reject any attempts to put any sort of unscientific standard number to bust us with. Now, you can show us science that is equivalent to DUI that shows, yes, if this number is hit, you're absolutely impaired. We'll talk about science, but you're not going to just kind of come some magic number that the cops like that unfairly punishes us. Oh, and by the way, the OLCC chair, when I was at that meeting that I showed you earlier, the listening session, when he talked about the DUI standards, he said, well, by the way, Oregon already has standards against driving under the influence of drugs. And as a DA, I can assure you that we're prosecuting plenty of people for that now. So if Rob Patridge thinks it's okay, I think we can keep the law that we've got. Marijuana consumers' right to work. This is where we're starting into the equalization part. Now, Measure 91 says that employers don't have to change their drug-free workplace laws. Okay, but we're coming after that. We're coming after this idea that you can judge our fitness for employment by the content of our urine. That's the reason I'm here. I didn't buy these suits and ties because I enjoy the hot dress. It's because I worked in the corporate world and I got booted over a drug test. So I will, to my dying breath, be fighting for this, our right to work. And we found from Colorado and Washington that there people are getting fired still, and they think, wait a minute, it's legal. Doesn't mean you can't be fired. We've got to fight that. And again, treat us like alcohol. Nobody'd be fired or not hired if they drank a beer a week ago on the weekend, right? But that can happen with a marijuana consumer. And then fighting for our equal rights. Legal consumers in Colorado and Washington can still be subject to losing their child custody or their parental visitation rights. They can still be dropped from Oregon transplant lists. They can still be denied Second Amendment rights. We shouldn't have to choose between our right to use marijuana or cannabis or however you choose to call it and our other fundamental rights. We should have all of our rights, and we're going to fight for that. And the final thing, the release of nonviolent marijuana prisoners. We still have growers and sellers and users and dealers all sitting in jail in Washington and Colorado. Now, Measure 91 doesn't do that. It doesn't have anything about the POWs, and that's understandable. You've got to bite one chunk at a time, right? But this is our next thing. This is what we're going after. Even if it takes an initiative to do this, we're going to get our POWs free. All right. One more. Oh, expanded cultivation rules. Oh, there was one more. Okay, so Measure 91 gives us 4 plants per household. Now, back in my college days, maybe Herb, you can confirm, I used to live in a place with 5 other guys, right? To think that the 6 of us would be growing 4 plants, that's a little low. But again, we wanted to start and get something, so we got 4 plants. But I really think we can lobby for increasing that to 6. The other states have it. Colorado, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. all allow people to cultivate 6 plants. And in Washington, D.C., they have an upper bound of 12 plants per household. 6 plants per person, 12 plants per household. I don't think that's unreasonable. And since Measure 91 gives the landlords and the ability to restrict our growing in certain places, that's correct, isn't it? The landlords can restrict our right to grow. In that case, I think there ought to be a provision where we can rent a space. We ought to be able to rent our own personal grow space for 4 plants. Can you imagine, like, one of those you store it places with the slide-up things and just lights, lights, lights in each one of those, and people doing their personal grows? That's something I'd like to see. All right, so that's what Portland Normal is about. That's what our mission is and what we'll be fighting for, how you can help. We have 2 levels of membership. If you want to be a basic member, it's absolutely free. Absolutely free. We want everyone who can join, and I'm not going to restrict that based on your economy. I've been poor many times, so If you can volunteer and help us, basic membership's free. All we want is your name, email, and or text message number. And Coleco's got the sign-up sheets for that. And just promise that you're going to respond to at least one alert a year. We'll send them out weekly. Now, we're not going to bombard you with spam like every day, but at least once a week, we'll have something like, call the Liquor Control Commissioner, call Representative Blumenauer, sign this petition online, whatever it might be. Just do one of those a year. You're a basic member. But if you'd like to help out in an active way, we have an active membership at $35 a year. That comes with an exclusive handmade apparel numbered membership pin, which would have been here today, except for Chinese New Year. China's like closed down the last 2 weeks of February. You can't get anything out of the factory. So next membership meeting, if anyone signs up today, we'll have those pins for you at the next membership meeting. The only way you can get them is by being an active member. You also get voting rights in our elections that are held every June. Our meetings are the fourth Saturday of our month. The June meeting will be elections for board members. You can nominate and you can vote on the board members in those elections. And you'll get your own plastic membership card. I had my Minnesota one, but I can't find it. But we can show you an example of that a little bit later. So that's my presentation on what Portland Normal is all about. Thank you. And let's turn things back over to Herb.
420 Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day. Get your tickets now for the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, March 15th and 16th at the Hilton, Eugene, Oregon, powered by MarijuanaPolitics.com. Former presidential candidate and two-term New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson will deliver the keynote address. Harborside Health Center's Steve D'Angelo will present at the pre-conference VIP reception. You'll also hear from State Senator Floyd Prezansky, New Approach Oregon's Anthony Johnson, Oregon marijuana attorneys Paul Loney and Leland Berger, and Oregon Liquor Control Commission's Director of Marijuana Programs, Tom Burns. Get your tickets at early bird pricing by acting now. Learn more at the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference at ommbc.com. This conference will provide you with a head start for success in the expanding Oregon marijuana industry. Get your tickets today at ommbc.com. Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you are looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit vapes.buzz and use promo code 420RADIO to get 10% off your online purchase, or just give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby! Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420.
And now more coverage of the Portland Normal inaugural meeting. This is Anthony Johnson from the Measure 91 campaign with live question and answer.
Thank you so much, Scott, for a very generous introduction. I think for a Measure 91, I get more credit than I deserve. You see Madeline Martinez, Lee Berger, longtime activists in this room, Ray, Russ himself, people who aren't with us here today, Paul Stanford, Jack Herrera, rhymes with hair, right? Jack Herrera, Dr. Levesque, who I had the opportunity to pay my respects to while he's in hospice care. And I gave him my notes for my victory speech to thank him, because I understand that legalizing marijuana in Oregon's been decades in the and it's taken a lot of people's work. I just happen to kind of help ride the wave and help pull together a coalition that could win at the ballot box and move us forward. But like Russ said, there's a lot of things still left to be done. I am really excited about the Portland Normal chapter. I became active in marijuana activism with Missouri Normal when I was at the University of Missouri in Columbia, Missouri, right in the middle of the state, right in the middle of the country. And I became an activist because I saw my African-American friends treated more harshly for marijuana offenses than my white friends. And I started going to Normal meetings, and I was a skeptic about the medical uses of marijuana, and I was a skeptic about the benefits of hemp, to be honest with you. I was purely in it for the civil libertarian and social justice issues, but I've since become educated on the medicinal benefits as well as the industrial uses of hemp, and I'll always fight for those causes as well. But first and foremost, ending the arrest and persecution and the barbaric practice of locking people in cages for marijuana is first and foremost my priority. So I want to thank everybody for putting in the work to do that. So give yourselves a round of applause for that. And now that Measure 91 has passed, you know, the coalition of cannabis consumers, patients, growers, dispensary owners, lawyers, consultants, professionals, politicians that all pulled together to achieve the biggest state election victory for marijuana in our nation's history thus far, with just over 56% of the vote, more than 100,000 votes. Late Governor John Kitzhaber, and about 50,000 more votes than incumbent United States Senator Jeff Merkley. And it's something we can be really proud of, that we had such a strong coalition, because that strong coalition gives us ammunition to protect the will of the voters. And that's what I'm working at now at the legislature. It's what New Approach Oregon, the PAC that started the process to pass Measure 91, is just looking to implement the will of the voters and not go against what people voted upon. So coming up on Wednesday at the Measure 91 committee, I believe it's the joint committee on Measure 91 implementation at the legislature, made up of senators and Republicans. Their first hearings are on Wednesday, and right off the bat, that we have the bill that really is the, I would say, the biggest threat to Measure 91, the biggest threat to probably medical marijuana as well, is Senate Bill 542, which would really strip out the local control and taxation aspects of Measure 91 and allow cities and counties to pass whatever tax they want, and to allow you know, just a simple majority of a city council or county commission to opt out of licensed marijuana businesses. So I believe that we will defeat that bill. I don't think there are any legislators on the committee that are in a hurry to hinder the regulated market's ability to compete with the underground market. So I think we'll be able to, you know, look, it looks good, we'll be able to defeat it, but it's important to make your voices heard. Email everyone on that committee, email your own representative and senator, and make sure you have your voice heard. Also on the agenda is a bill that would strip marijuana businesses' ability to operate within a mile from a school. We already have the 1,000-foot school rule. That's enough to really satisfy the Cole memo and the federal government's priorities. We definitely don't need a mile, which would really strip out businesses from many communities. So that's another one to make sure your legislators' voices are heard. And then additionally, they're going to hear about opening up Oregon Health Authority rulemaking to allow medical marijuana facilities to be able to relocate if somebody moves within a school, moves in within 1,000 feet of them. So most people would agree that's a good thing, that if somebody has put their life savings in a medical marijuana facility, they shouldn't have to vacate immediately and shut down if a school moves in within 1,000 feet of them. With that, that's really the things that are on the top of the agenda. I really encourage everybody to just stay vocal, make sure your voices are heard, and that, you know, if you definitely the normal principles Russ has laid out are good policies. So with that, I'm willing to take questions.
All right, let me help out with this. We are recording, so we want to make sure we get the mics. Herb will be on this side. I'll be on this side. Who's got a question?
Here we go. Question number one. First off, Anthony, thank you very much for all the work that you put into this. You know, I'm not alone in knowing all the time and how much effort this takes. Since you spent so much time in Salem, you know, I went down there for the first time last week and sat in on the joint committee. They're open to the public, so Anthony is right that you can go there and, you know, support by just being there. And but since you spent so much time there and you have your finger right on the pulse, how do you feel that they're going to go? Because I know there's a lot of unknowns right now. You know, we're all just kind of waiting. But how do you feel that they are going to have for the licensing requirements just being from like opening up? Sorry, I just woke up like a half hour ago. How do you? Because my concern is that they have licensing open. Just, you know, I see this not only as a great opportunity for our state to, but I see that this is an awesome opportunity for Oregonian small businesses. And we've been hearing a lot from, you know, who are they going to allow? Who are they going to accept licenses? Who are they going to give license to? I'm just wondering what's your feeling? One, what's your feeling about opening licensing just to Oregonians? And two, what do you think that they're going to do with that?
So Measure 91 was silent on residency requirements. I don't really have a position either way on residency requirements. Probably not going to take a position on that. Don't necessarily oppose them. I think the legislators' inclination is to protect Oregon businesses as much as possible and the small kind of mom and pop shops. And so if I had a crystal ball or trying to predict if there were going to be some type of in-state residency requirement for at least, if not owners or 50% owners or similar to the medical marijuana facilities, you have to have a manager, you know, person responsible for the facility be an Oregonian resident. I think that's most likely going to occur. I think the one thing that's probably up in the air is how much investment can come from out of state. You know, I think there is a concern about big money coming from out of state and kind of controlling the market. But at the same time, if somebody is a mom and pop operation and they want to expand, you know, say they're supplying a medical marijuana dispensary now, but they'd like to expand to a Measure 9, both on the medical side and the Measure 91 side. And if they have a rich relative that lives in Colorado or California, their ability to get some investment or a loan from them, I think is probably something the legislators are open to allowing, particularly because no business can get a small business loan from a bank for a marijuana business at the moment. So if I had to predict, I think there will be some type of residency requirement, at least a manager or a co-owner that's an Oregon resident, at least for the first few years under the licensing system.
Is that good? All right. Anyone else?
Yes. Let's come over here.
Thanks. Thanks for taking this question. Just had a quick question about the school zones and dispensaries specifically. You talked about, you know, the OLCC or the OMMP facilitating some kind of like move if a school was to pop up in 1,000 feet of your dispensary. What provisions were they specifically, you know, that you had in mind when addressing this issue?
The provisions as far as what exactly?
Well, you said that you touched down on if a school was to open up within 1,000 feet of an existing dispensary, there would be steps to you know, to rectify that situation or to handle that in a specific way. I was wondering if you could actually elaborate on that a little bit more.
Gotcha. So the bill that's before the legislature, I believe it just opens up to rulemaking to come up with a process for that. And I think some of the things that would be debated, you know, on one hand would be don't have to move at all. Say the school moves in 990 feet away from you. Maybe that can suffice. or you have a year to move, or maybe it can be amended that you have, 18 months to move, but most likely, a year to move to find a new place and to have the ability to, not see your life savings go away. So that's probably the most likely thing, is to give you a time frame before you can move. Thank you, Sam.
Anthony.
Hey, Leo.
I was wondering if you could comment on the House bill that was introduced by Lou Frederick last week regarding the expungement of nonviolent marijuana crimes, and that take place before July of 2015.
Definitely completely in support of that. I don't know where that bill is at the moment, but I think it's something we should definitely monitor and throw our support. I do know we do have some legislators that's definitely important for. So I think it's something that we have a good chance of getting past this session. So definitely something to monitor. I don't think it has happened. Lee, do you aware of?
Aware that he had introduced a bill. I know that in 2013, the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association sponsored a bill that reduced manufacturing from an A to a B felony, so it could be expunged after 20 years, and changed the delivery statute to be in C felony so that they could be expunged after 3 years. There was a glitch in it, however, that made it so if you got convicted today of manufacturing, you could expunge in 20 years, but you couldn't relate back. And there is a bill to fix that was scheduled for hearing this week in the Senate Judiciary Committee, which was pulled because of concerns about how Measure 91 affected it. So I'm guessing that between whatever it is OCDLA is doing and whatever it is Lou Frederick is doing, we're going to get some positive result that takes care of this issue. What is important, and what I hope groups like Portland Normal could work on, has to do with the fact that at any given time, 100, mostly men, in Oregon prisons solely on cannabis-related offenses, and perhaps doing something. I have spoken with a dispensary owner who is going to be working with a group that the law school had set up, the Justice Institute, on this, but it would be a good Portland Normal project to try and see if we can get Governor Brown to commute those sentences, and we could free the prisoners, because that is what Measure 91 is about. Building an industry is how we got what we're going to have under 91, but the industry is secondary to ending the arrests and prosecutions and freeing the prisoners. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you, Lee. Anthony, over here.
So, hi, Anthony. Steve. I know that we have quite a few things that we're trying to keep track of here. I'm have at least half a dozen bills that I know I'm following. One I'm concerned about is HB 2546 that adds cannabinoids to the Clean Air Act. I know the intention of that is that legislation is to protect minors from tobacco and e-cigarettes. But we were talking about trying to have, where's our pub, where's our vape lounge, and this is definitely going to inhibit that, and that is concerned. I've already emailed all the members of the committee, but I don't know where that bill is at, and I wondered if you were tracking that at all.
That bill is in the health care committee?
It's passed out of committee, and it's going to get a third, it's at its third reading in the House. It's going to be voted on soon in the House, with Representative Buckley, who's one of the co-sponsors about it. But in email communications, he's indicated he didn't want to use that bill to create vapor lounges. Now, there may be one thing Russ and I agreed on, and that I testified about on 2641, is that Maureen Dowd wouldn't have wound up in a hotel room eating chocolate and wondering why nothing was happening and eating some more, if she had a lounge to go to. So it's critical that this happens, and I'd be curious, just build on your question, if you're hearing that from legislators, is there some other vehicle besides House Bill 2641 that can address the need for that?
Yeah, I have heard that having an exemption for particularly for medical patients or getting kind of the same type of treatment that cigar bars have for like a special license, those are possible. So I think that important for people to let their legislators know that bill, if it passes out of the House, which I expect it will then move to the Senate. So then we'll have a chance to either amend it then during the Senate or tackle another bill that would, you know, I think the list of priorities, I'm sure a lot of people would like to have cannabinoids as far as the cannabinoid, I guess, e-cigarettes being sold to minors. I think if it's not a patient, you know, I think that's something that, you know, you gotta say if you're 18, you can't buy it. That's completely acceptable. Then, you know, I think most people would like to see, you know, the cannabinoid be stripped out for everyone. If we can't get it for everyone, then at least for patients. And then if we can't do that, then at least to have a separate lounge like cigars have. So I think it's, I think it's possible to do. And I think that's I think it's something we can work on this session. And definitely if we can't get done this session, then future sessions.
There's no science to adding it to the Clean Air Act, though, and we're talking about fighting junk science or lack of science. I mean, cannabinoids are neuroprotective. There's all these studies about it doesn't do lung damage and the way tobacco does. I mean, there's no science supporting it being part of the Clean Air Act.
That is correct, Steve. I guess probably one of the things that is can be very maddening for everybody involved in cannabis activism is that science can kind of go out the window in the halls of the legislature or the halls of Congress. Or
hey, Steve, if you email me about that, I'll put together a fact sheet and a here's the studies to look at thing that we can at least get to them that they're passing junk science.
I submitted as written testimony stuff from California Normal that Dale Gehringer had provided me that California Normal had submitted in a some kind of like a county hearing on this issue. So, you know, it's in the record anyway. And in fact, if you look up the committee, look up the hearing, look up the exhibits, you can find that there.
Yeah, but that science definitely, it can't hurt. But unfortunately, good science doesn't always win the day in politics.
Any other questions?
Anyone else? Sam? I just wanted to add to that in terms of, and Lee, maybe you can testify this as well. You said that how many lobbyists were working on that bill right now, Lee?
There's 50 lobbyists were working on the bill.
Okay.
When I testified, Sam, I sat next to a guy from Reynolds, in R.J. Reynolds.
Yeah.
So, fuck. You know.
So with that in mind, you know, for those of you who are not super familiar with the legislative process, once a bill passes out of one chamber, whether it be the House or the Senate, if it gets amended in the second chamber, it has to go back to the original chamber that it was in. And so if you're thinking about doing some kind of legislation with vapor lounges that has that kind of direct effect, I would heavily encourage you to look for a different bill to work it into and just be mindful of what the original language is so you can make sure that they mesh. Because with 50 basically tobacco lobbyists working on that bill, I don't see any way in hell that they're going to allow you to move it back to another chamber, open it back up to make more amendments, and then push it through the other side. So just something to think about in terms of legislative strategy.
Thank you, Sam. Anyone else over here on this side?
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Anthony. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the fears that are being raised by the legislature. I think understanding fear as sort of the resistance to the progress that's being made, and if you could talk a little bit, and not just kind of the obvious, you know, preventing it from getting into minors or DUI issues, but some of the fears that are sort of contained in some of the opponents of what's going on in Salem.
Some of the kind of fears that are brought up, you know, I think the cities and like to bring up the fact that they don't think they get enough money and that they're going to have to spend more on enforcement than they're getting, even though Measure 91 gives 10% to cities and 10% to counties earmarked for the local law enforcement. And then you hear a lot of fears of, you know, how to track marijuana from seed to sale and not to have interference from the federal government, which I think is something that all of us are going to, you know, want to be paying attention to and have concerns about. And high concentrate THC products, you know, butane hash oil, propane hash oil, things like that, especially things that are explosive, definitely, or can be explosive, not done properly, definitely concerns folks and people who are allies of ours at the legislature and opponents as well, don't want to have a, you know, Maureen Dowd story hit the Oregonian, you know, a few days before 4 to 8 states are voting on legalization in 2016. So that, you know, so the packaging and dosage and labeling of edibles, leakage into the underground market, federal interference, and ensuring that there's enough revenue to properly enforce, they're all big concerns and fears that, that folks have.
Anyone else over here?
All right, that's good. Give Anthony another hand for coming out here and spending some time with us, answering some questions.
Anthony Johnson at the Portland Normal Meeting this last Saturday.
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
Funky Roller Room.
What's happening, Groovy Cats? This is your Funk Master of Ceremonies, Big Daddy. And I want you to join me every Thursday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here at the Funky Roller Ring. Your home of soul, funk, and disco, baby.
Funky-licious.
There's always a party at the Funky Roller Ring.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
Oh, my goodness. Have you heard the latest from New York Police Department Commissioner Bill Bratton? Oh, my God. Picking this up from Newsday out in New York City. NYPD Commissioner William Bratton blames pot dealers for part of the rise in killings and shootings. It's the fault of pot dealers because, as we know, marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. None other than Harry Anslinger intoned those words over 50 years ago, and it seems that the NYPD is still living by them today. The statistics are that New York City homicides climbed by 20% and shootings climbed by 25% in the first 2 months of 2015, something that Police Commissioner Bratton partially blamed on dealers fighting over, quote, marijuana a seemingly innocent drug that is being legalized around the country, end quote. From New Year's Day to March 1st, there have been 54 killings in the city compared to 45 in the same time period in 2014. Shootings jumped from 121 to 151 so far, with gunfire causing 75% of the homicides. Well, look, the idea that it's pot dealers fighting over this that's causing the big problem may be partially because pot is illegal in New York. I'd like you, Commissioner Bratton, to take a look at the statistics from the cities of Denver and Seattle to find out how many pot dealers have been shot there recently. Last I checked, the state of Colorado had done about $700 million in pot dealer business with 322 pot dealer storefronts that turned in over $70 million in taxes to the state of Colorado. But in New York, he's considering that marijuana is partially to blame for a rise in shootings. Now, again, 54 versus 45, we're not talking about, you know, massive changes in numbers, not like epidemics or anything that's going on. And another thing that's not being brought up here is that slowdown by the NYPD that was turning their back on their mayor because he said he warns his black child about dealing with police. How about that slowdown that happened those last 2 weeks of December, where the harassment of citizens dropped by 90% or so? Perhaps that filtered down to the street level. Perhaps that was an opportunity for some who felt like, oh, if the police aren't going to be doing their jobs, why, this would be the time to start settling some old debts. Could that be part of the blame? Bratton continued to say, quote, this is not the bad old days roaring back. This is something we have our arms around. Now, crime, overall serious crime in New York has fallen by about 11% to levels not seen since the early 1990s. And Bratton continued by saying, quote, it is ironic that in a city which is a transfer point for huge amounts of drugs, heroin, cocaine, hallucinogens, that one drug is actually the causal factor in so much of our shootings and murder is marijuana. We just see marijuana everywhere when we make these arrests and get the guns off the street, end quote. Dermot Shea, the NYPD's top crime analysis official, said that there's big spikes in marijuana-related homicides, and people charged with the homicide also have connection to controlled substances, specifically marijuana. Quote, marijuana is coming up repeatedly. Oh, you mean so, like, criminals are like other people, and they also like to enjoy marijuana. That's all you're telling me in this particular statistic. Now, he says that the decline in stop and frisks has no connection to the gun violence and the killings. And cops weren't hearing from the street that criminals were emboldened now to carry weapons. However, a study that was done by the NYPD last year showed that in a review of 10 high shooting precincts, about half showed an increase in gun violence as stop and frisks declined, while others saw a drop in shootings. Well, folks, here's your New York City news as we wind up this hour two of the Russ Belville Show. Time flies when you legalize. Thanks for joining us for this last couple of hours. You can catch all of the Oregon meeting of Portland Normal. You can check that out online at the Portland Normal YouTube page. Easiest way to get there would just be follow Portland Normal on Twitter. And the links will be there in the Twitter feed. I'm at Radical Russ on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else. Except Instagram. Some kid stole Radical Russ from me before I could get it. Darn it. That's all the time I got for today. Thanks for joining us. Join us tomorrow for more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.